You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
Both hailing from parts unknown at a combined weight of 501 pounds. They are the Morning Rush Hour World Tag Team Champions. They have no fear, no back down, just a couple of gutsy guys. No one will take those MRH World Tag titles from these men. It's Taz, it's the Moose, illustrious champions, right here every day on CBS Sports Radio.
You know it's every day, Moose and Taz be paving the way. Talking about every sport, you know that they never missing a play. From the NBA to the NFL, the college games, they always bringing the knowledge, nobody ever can try to go stop it. Only be talking the truth, only be talking the truth, ayy.
All right, it's Taz and the Moose with you right here on CBS Sports Radio. A good Thursday, one and all. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is more than a house. It's a personal paradise. Get yours with Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. Mike, Pete, across the way. Bogus, your updates. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227.
Attention, hotline fans.
Talked about it earlier in the week. So, Adam Schefter. Monday night game, Pats and Jets, Taz. We talked about during the pregame show on ESPN that night that Schefter had a conversation. Steve Young was there, and everybody on that pregame show was sitting there. I think Lewis Riddick was sitting there as well. Susie Colbert does a very good job on
ESPN. She does a good job, yeah.
And a longtime veteran of covering the National Football League. He brought up the course of the conversation about Tom Brady's future. Mm. Brady's put his house up for sale. He did about 6 months ago.
Right.
His trainer, TB12, Alex Guerrero, has put his house up for sale. Brady has an out on his contract. He's basically going year to year with the New England Patriots.
Right, right.
Right? So Tom Brady, off of all that, and listen, Steve Young then pointed out, you know, and the speculation was not necessarily Brady retiring, but maybe Brady playing someplace else.
Right, right.
Right? That's kind of the vibe I got. I didn't get a vibe that Brady wanted to call it. And maybe that's the wrong vibe that I got from that conversation watching Schefter, Taz. I got the idea of him.
I got the same vibe as you.
Of him going playing football with another team and another franchise, another organization. Here is Brady yesterday. He goes on WEEI every single week. Here's Tom Brady yesterday talking about his future off of what Schefter had to say Monday night. Take a listen.
That's the great part for me is I don't know. And I think that's been a unique situation that I've been in, because I think when you commit to a team for a certain amount of years, you kind of feel like your responsibility is to always fulfill the contract. It's been good because I'm just taking it day by day and I'm enjoying what I have. And I don't know what the future holds. And the great part is for me, football at this point is all borrowed time. I mean, I never expected to play 20 years and I'm playing on a great team. It's just been an incredible 20 years of my life to play for Mr. Kraft and Jonathan, the Kraft family, and for Coach Belichick.
Oh,
to have so much success,
a
dream come true. You know, one day I'll wake up and I feel like, okay, that'll be enough. When that day comes. And I don't know if it'll be after this year. You know, I don't know if it'll be 5 years from now.
That's a lot of hogwash, Moose.
Well, okay.
It is.
I just had something I wanted to throw out.
Yeah,
what do you mean by hogwash?
I mean, I think it's a load of BS. I think what he's saying is, like, more or less the overview, what I got from him was like, listen, I'm on borrowed time right now, and I might wake up and I want to play no more. But right now, I don't know what the future holds. I don't believe him. Him and his wife, as a couple and as separate people, they're both very successful as individuals.
Sure.
Okay, not, she's got a lot of success. She's not just Tom Brady's wife.
Yeah.
So my point is, successful people, They have an arc in their life, a story arc on what they're going to do. They know. They don't just put their homes up, their mansion. He has a mansion, okay, in the suburbs there, somewhere outside of Boston, wherever in Massachusetts.
I think it's Brookline.
Brookline, Massachusetts. Okay, cool.
Right off the golf course.
So, you know what I mean? Like, you're not just selling, this is not just like some two-family house that he's putting up for sale. I mean, this is like, you know, this is his mansion. He's got a ton of money. My point is saying it's hogwash. I do think he knows his future, and that's his prerogative not to share it with the public. That's his business. That's why I'm saying it's hogwash. I respect that he's keeping it private.
Yeah.
He knows. Are you buying that he doesn't know what his future is?
No. I don't buy that. I agree with you that he has an idea of what he wants to do.
Yeah.
But the thing that I took away from it, Taz, is this. Off the Schefter conversation, the vibe I got was that Schefter was talking about him playing someplace else. Off of his comments yesterday from EEI, I got a sense of him calling it a career. Do you see what I'm saying? I got a sense of that when he uses I'm on borrowed time, no one expects to play 20 years in the NFL, I'm taking it day by day, I don't know what the future holds. Like, I got a sense more of a case of him not picking up and going to play for, I don't know, say for his buddy Mike Vrabel in the Tennessee Bills. Titans or the Buffalo Bills, right? But you know what I mean. And maybe I'm reading wrong. Maybe it's a case of, you know, I'm not reading those comments properly, but I didn't get a sense that he was looking to leave the Pats. I kind of got a sense of that you never know. Hmm. I mean, you know, I'm borrowed time. Maybe it's a case of that this ends up being it. I mean, that, you know, I'm done playing in the NFL after this year.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that's exactly what he's going to do, but that's the kind of sense I got from the comments. I didn't necessarily get a sense that he's looking to go play someplace else.
Mm. Yeah, you know, dissecting it, I mean, I think you're onto something. I think you might be right about that. I never thought of it like that, listening to what he said, but you're right. You're right. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, maybe it's.
I could be wrong. Yeah. I mean, listen, I have no idea. I mean, I'm just kind of reading those comments, and I got a sense that maybe Tom Brady's saying, you know, I've had enough. You know, maybe it's a case of, you know, his oldest son Jack is 12 years of age. You know, he referenced Jack during that Randy Moss interview on Monday night. Maybe it's a case of, you know, he realizes it. Maybe his body's not reacting the same way. We've talked about it. He hasn't looked as sharp this year as he has in the last 2 or 3 years. Maybe it's a case of the Patriot way, you know, get out a year too early instead of a year too late. I don't think Tom Brady wants to hold on.
Mm.
Don't you know what I mean?
I think you're right about that. He doesn't have to.
He doesn't have to. But do you get a sense that Tom Brady's going to, you know, be out there and struggling and staggering around? He doesn't need the money.
No.
They've got more money than God. I mean, Giselle was the highest paid supermodel at the peak of her career in the entire world. I mean, she was making more money. She was making 3-4 times the amount of money that Tom Brady was making per year.
Money
is not a factor, Taz. I just don't get a sense that he loves the game. I don't think he wants to hurt his image and go out there and be a bad quarterback. I don't think he wants to do that.
I think you're 1,000% correct. He doesn't want to affect his legacy, more importantly. And I think that you're right about his image and about what people remember. Matt, I remember, like, for myself, people always say, you hung up early. I didn't have a career nowhere near like Tom Brady as far as equating it to wrestling. Nowhere near that. But what I'm saying is people said, man, you left the game early. You left the business early. And I did because of the way I was booked. I was not getting booked right for WWE. They didn't know how to book me right. And I was worried about the good stuff I did in my career being tarnished even more by WWE. So I wanted to get out.
Fair.
So that's why when you say it about Brady, some people might not see a connection, but that's how I.
When
you're
saying
about Brady, yeah, I see what you're saying.
You thought about that stuff at that time.
Yeah, I had to because that stuff's important when you perform as an athlete and stuff. Like you know, you want people to remember you as when you want to kind of leave on top if you can. You don't want to be a former shell of yourself. That's the point you're making, I believe, about Tom
exactly
Brady.
Yeah, exactly right. You don't want to be Willie Mays falling down in center field for the Mets.
There you go.
You don't want to be
Kyrie Irving falling down on the court.
Right.
On
the court last night. You don't want to be Johnny Unitas playing for the Chargers.
Right. Correct.
You know, all due respect to those guys for trying to continue their career. I'm not, but that's, you know, the lasting image. There are people that remember more about Willie Mays falling down for the Mets center field then they remember Willie Mays as an amazing Giant.
Tremendous player.
And they kind of poke fun at the fact, and he has kind of been a talking point of what you don't want to do as a professional athlete. And I think for Tom Brady, I don't know. I mean, he's 42 years of age, Taz. He's talked about playing till he's 45 years old. But Couldn't you see a case this year where if the Patriots win the Super Bowl again, that Tom Brady says, you know,
I'm
goodbye,
done.
Good luck.
I definitely
guys.
Could.
I'm done. I'm
I
done
definitely
for the,
could.
I've had an amazing career. I'm the greatest quarterback of all time. I've accomplished everything I can. I'm healthy. I can walk down the street. My body's not aching. I'm good.
I personally cannot wait for him to retire.
Yeah, no, I know.
I've been waiting for years. I know. No, but anyway, the guy has had an amazing career, and he's still playing great, which is he's still in the top 10 in passing. I think he's like, I was looking earlier, I think he's like 7th or 8th in the NFL right now in passing in this 2019 season, and he's probably 75 years old. I'm joking. But you know what I mean? Like, it's amazing. He's still in the upper echelon. He's playing great, and his team's undefeated. Like, it's just amazing. I could see that happen. You're saying when they're hoisting the trophy up again, and Mr. Kraft's there in his, you know, $17,000 custom suit.
Yes.
I love Tommy.
The Armani.
And, yeah, and I could see Brady going, you know what? With the confetti falling on him, and his beautiful wife smiling, just spitting out $1,000 bills out of her mouth. I could just see Brady saying, "I'm done." And then you will hear a roar out of Long Island. Okay, off the water on the south shore of Long Island, you'll hear, "Yes!" That's what you'll hear no matter where you are. You'll hear it because you'll be across the water in Connecticut.
Yeah, right.
So you'll hear it loud.
I'll be like, "What's that wailing sound?"
Don, what was that noise?
Right, what is that? What else went wrong in our house? Don't worry, it's not a pipe about to burst. That's Taz. Brady just retired.
He's across the Long Island
right,
Sound.
Right, the division's wide open. It's time to celebrate. He just opened up a bottle of Cristal.
Dude, I'm telling you, I would go nuts.
Like, yeah, I
feel like the man's never retiring. I have to. I know that's not the truth, but it just never ends. The success never ends. I'm looking at Mikey B. Right, he's just shaking his head like it's unbelievable. He's not a hater in a patient. It's just crazy, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get. Well, he's ageless. You mentioned in terms of running through his success this year, throwing the football, and the offense isn't nearly as good. And they dink and dunk their way down the football field, and you know they just added Sanu, and they'll get their first round pick Henry, the wide receiver, you know, out of Arizona State, you know, sooner rather than later, and. Maybe he'll be back in a couple weeks at the wide receiver position. And maybe that offense will get more dynamic as this season goes along, Taz. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading wrong. Maybe this is going to be it for Tom Brady. Maybe
you said, I keep forgetting who our guest was when you said that to
Schlereth.
That's right, Mark Schlereth.
Right.
Stinky.
Yes.
And he disagreed with you. And I didn't want to interrupt, but you were talking. I'm like, wow, you know, I think Moose might be onto something here. And Stinky disagreed. Stinky was wrong because Brady's not the same.
No, he's not the same.
Not the same. The Sanu thing's a big plus for them.
Oh, that adds something.
That's going to really be a good deal
for
them. Yeah,
you know what? Because as we mentioned before, Taz, he allows that offense. You can do a lot of different things with Mohamed Sanu.
He's good.
He's just not lining up a wide receiver. You could do some trick plays with him. He can run the ball out of the backfield. If you want to do some wildcat, you could do some wildcat with him. I don't know why you'd ever take Brady off the field. But if you decided to do that, you could do that with Mohamed Sanu. Sanu, as I witnessed, and you know, there have been, you know, and New England Patriots are dotted with former Scarlet Knight players.
Yeah, they love the Rutgers guys.
Mohamed Sanu is a freaky athlete. He's a really good man. He's a really good man as well.
You've met him?
I did on a couple of
nice.
I mean, I'm talking about when he was in college.
When he was in college, yeah,
correct. I haven't met him when he was drafted by Cincinnati, or I haven't been around him when he was drafted by Cincinnati or played for Atlanta or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, he's a really good kid.
Yeah,
and when
cool.
He was down at Rutgers, he's a really good young man.
Yeah, I bet he is. Yeah, because you never hear nothing out of him, and you know he's been playing there with Julio Jones in Atlanta, which is, you know, if you're going to be, you know, kind of like. Not the big star receiver, but this other guy is. That's not a bad guy to be behind, in essence. That's going to change now. I think that with the Patriots, Sanu has got the opportunity with Brady throwing the football to him and the way they know how to utilize, you know, their weapons. If Antonio Brown didn't implode, he was going to have a huge year with Brady. That was going to work. That was going to work. You give Brady weapons like a Sanu, and I'm not saying Sanu's better than Antonio Brown yet, but, you know, he's definitely not a headache, that's for sure. But I'm just saying, like, you give, to the point you're making, Connie, you give Brady some real weapons out there.
Yeah.
I mean,
sky's the limit. Now the offensive line's got to do its job, and they can run it, Taz, and they change their game plan based on the opponent that they're going up against. But you're right, Sanu's a weapon that that Brady's going to make great use out of.
I know that, I think the Bills play the Patriots game towards the end of the year. I think it's like in December. This Sanu thing is going to be a nightmare. When are they playing him again? I don't even know. It's going to be a nightmare. I feel it already. I'm miserable about Sanu.
It's I
share that with you.
Yeah. You got to worry. I mean, the Bills just keep winning games. That's all you got to worry about. Make the playoffs and let the chips fall where they may.
I know, but we're different type of fans of our teams.
Your team is actually watchable.
I know. I just want them to beat one team. I don't care what happens. I just want them to beat the Patriots.
That's it.
You, on the other hand, tonight are rooting against your team.
I'm rooting for Cousins.
Right. Exactly. So it's
I'm Team KC tonight.
Right. I know. It's just,
and that's not Kansas City,
which is ironic because not only are you're rooting against your team, the Redskins, but you're rooting for a guy that you had the hottest take ever on.
I know.
On the
right.
Show,
you're right.
You went off.
I
on
did
him.
Go off.
It was a star.
But tonight. I will, if I had one, I'd put on my purple number 8. And
Robbie's got one if you need. Rosenhaus.
I don't know. Does he? Every time I see him, it's
he's got them all.
He's wearing an Adrian Peterson jersey.
Yeah, but he's a gigantic.
He's a gigantic man.
No, I meant to say gigantic Viking fan.
Oh, that's.
But he is. He's probably got all the jerseys because he loves the Vikes. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
We've established that in the show.
Yes. Yeah.
Here goes the. Once you mention Robbie, Pete the Body he's putting his gigantic headsets on. What's up, Pete? What's
I got nothing to say.
Yeah, man.
To Brady, though, here, do you think he would ever leave on a loss?
No. No.
So when he talks about what he says to WEI, in terms of his future and, on borrowed time, do you think he's thinking about there? Just speculation now. We win the Super Bowl, I leave. Mm-hmm. We lose, I come back.
Yeah. You nailed it because you said it before. You said that you could see him, Brady, retiring, right after winning the Super Bowl or whatever. I think that he will. In the press conference, they're going to win the Super Bowl, unfortunately, because it's just has to be. I think you nailed it with that. I think that if they don't win the Super Bowl, he keeps low-key Jones, and then he comes back for another year.
Right, I just can't.
He wants to leave on top. To the point.
No, I agree with you.
He does.
And Taz, you get this sense, even with the Moss interview.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just kind of been a different tone with him this year than in the past, right? He's doing those Instagram stuff with his dad and his son.
What's
his
he doing?
Oldest son, Jack. Remember after wins? We played it.
Oh,
remember
yeah,
after wins? Yeah. We're 6-0. We're 5-0. We're 4-0. On to Buffalo. Great.
And
then they play
bragging.
Highlights.
That's great content.
Like, don't you... I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading. I get a sense it's a little bit different this year for Brady. It's not a matter of him going out there and reaffirming. Because he could easily have told the guys on EEI, listen, guys, I've told you, I want to play until I'm 45 years old. I have no interest in leaving the game. He didn't say that.
No, he didn't. He left himself an out, dude. I think you're right. I think he's leaving himself a situation where if they do win the Super Bowl, and how would he retire? Would he retire? I think he retires hosting the trophy. I'm done. That's why I think he does it.
I don't think he'd take that moment away from his teammates.
See how I think? I would.
Yeah, I know.
All right, guys, this is great. I want to make it about me for a second here.
Yeah, right. And
I'm
the
retiring.
Rest of the night is going to be about me and my career. I'm going to minimize this Super Bowl victory. I want everyone to just talk about me and my exploits and where I stand as the greatest quarterback of all time for the next 5 days until we have our victory parade on those dopey duck boats up in Boston.
I really didn't think of that until you just said it about the other team. How bad is that? I'm thinking if I'm Brady, I'm leaving holding that trophy
right.
up. That'd be right. Then it's all
Edelman
about
be
him.
Like, but wait, I'm Super Bowl MVP.
Edelman. No, Sanu would be like, wait, what happened?
Wait a second, what?
I just had 3 touchdowns in the Super Bowl.
No one wants to talk to us. I just won the Super Bowl. They all want to talk to number 12.
Oh, my God. Brady, Sanu's like, why'd I come here? You just retired. Oh, no.
Yeah. Might we see the return of Drew Brees this weekend? We'll get into that next. It's Taz Moose, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. Listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
That's right, 855-212-4227. Will the Saints get their Hall of Fame quarterback back this weekend. We'll touch upon that. But Bogus is in the house. What's up, Andrew?
Moose, Tez, America. Your report is sponsored by the NFL, who invites fans to participate in Huddle for 100. Fans are encouraged to volunteer by getting out, getting active, and improving their local environment. Visit NFL.com/Huddle for 100 to learn how you can get involved. The Nationals and Astros each scored two runs, their first times up in Game 2 of the World Series last night. They threatened but didn't score again for the next five frames. And then the top of the seventh happened.
Swinging a line drive, base hit center field. Turner will score. Soto the plate, and he will score. As Drubal Cabrera drives home two, the Nationals have scored four in the top of the seventh. They lead Houston 6-2 here at Minute Maid Park.
Dave Jagler on Nats Radio. They tacked on two more for a six-run outburst. It began with Kurt Suzuki's tie-breaking solo shot off Justin Verlander. The Nats scored four more times over the next two at-bats for a 12-3 rout in Houston and a 2-0 series lead. The next three games in D.C. starting tomorrow night. Verlander is now 0-5 in six World Series starts, charged with four runs over six plus in Game 2.
We didn't play our best baseball. Things didn't go our way. We got an off day tomorrow. We don't have time to feel bad about ourselves. So.
Steven Strasburg battled for six innings, allowing only Alex Bregman's two-run blast in the first. Anibal Sanchez, Zach Greinke slated to start Game 3. It was Game 1 for his Nuggets, but Jason Kosmicki already in midseason form.
Barton has it inside the arc, goes right to the rack, loses it. Tipped by Jokic, got it! Oh, that's a dagger and a timeout. Portland puts Denver up by 7 with 46.7 to go. And that'll have the fans headed to the exits here in Portland. Good night, everybody. Drive careful now.
Go away.
I mean, he better
get
be waving while he's doing
voice.
This.
Yeah, no bass in his voice. It sounds like a cackling, just a treble.
It got a little game showy at the end.
His gimmick? They all have gimmicks, and then we sell.
Get your pets spayed and neutered.
Right, and then we come on the radio and we sell their
Thanks,
gimmicks.
Bob Barker.
It's like, really?
Welcome back to The Price is Right.
It's like unbelievable.
Well, that's what our studio looks like, The Price is Right.
Where's the prize
same,
wheel?
It's the same. It's
yeah,
the
they
same
have logo. Beautiful yeah. women showing off their stuff. We have Pete.
A problem with that?
No problem.
No,
you're a beautiful man.
Just like this burrito.
Six of one, half dozen another. It's okay.
Yeah. The Price is that still on TV?
Yes
with
Drew Carey is hosting.
My grandmother used to watch it all the time, and I used to see it at the house, you know, the Bob Barker guy.
Yeah.
And it was, come on down!
That was the only good news about being sick as a kid. When I was home from school, you could watch Price is Right.
Yeah. Does Drew Carey? Does he?
Wow.
Does Drew Carey do the Come On Down? He stole Bob Barker's gimmick.
Well, that was what's his name, the announcer.
Yeah.
Who was like, what was his name?
Rod Roddy. Yeah. And who passed away?
Yes.
Oh, Rod Roddy passed away.
God rest his soul.
Come on down. Yeah. You're the next contestant on The Price is Right.
Rebecca from Los Angeles, come on down, girl.
It was jarring to me when Barker went from the dyed jet black hair to all of a sudden he was, the white.
Yeah.
And now you have skinny Drew Carey.
In the span of like a week.
Yeah.
Yes, now you got skinny Drew Carey who's now dyeing his hair again.
Yeah, but skinny Drew Carey is also unnerving.
Yes, it's a little. Yes. Right, it's like skinny Al Roker.
Yes. I told you guys, I had the chance to headbutt him, and I didn't. So I should have headbutted
him. You should have.
Yep. I should
have. That would have been great.
He was in that Royal Rumble match. I think he lasted longer than me.
Yeah, that was the one you took the early exit on.
Yeah,
what night of the week was that? Did that air?
Sunday night paper.
Okay.
The Price is Right was a great show. I'm saying it in past tense because without Bob Barker, to me, it stinks. So,
it's still good.
That's my opinion.
Plinko. Plinko was my favorite game.
Yeah.
On the Price. Plinko?
Plinko was where you had the little like disc and you'd go on top of the board and it was like all kind of slotted things where you could try and win some money.
Pachinko.
No.
Not Plinko. Are you talking about Pachinko?
No.
Okay. Do you know what Pachinko is? Do you know what Pachinko?
No, but that's not what I was referencing.
I'm referencing
Plinko.
Okay, well, listen. This is a deeper conversation.
K-O.
Why are you both attacking me verbally right
because
now?
Because you basically, I said something and you're like, you're wrong.
No. I don't mean to be aggressive.
I'm not wrong. I saw it the other day.
Yeah, I just Googled it. It's Plinko.
Okay. It's Plinko.
Okay. If you both could stop saying the word Plinko and let me get one sentence in. Tell me what you do when they play this game on Price is Right. What did they do? They drop something on top of a gimmick and a ball or something
well,
like that?
It's a board on top of it. It's
you have to go upstairs to get to the top of the Plinko board.
Yeah, 10 stairs to go on top of the Plinko board. Underneath, there's like slotted money slots, like 5,000, 0, 250, or whatever. And you drop the little Plinko chip. And it's kind of...
And there's pegs on the board.
Pegs on the board to where the chip bounces all around, and then it drops into a slot.
This is where we're both right, all three of us. I mentioned Pachinko. Pachinko is something that's huge in Japan, okay, that I think the Price is Right stole the idea. If you look, if you Google Pachinko, okay, and it's basically... I've been in Pachinko houses in Japan. They're basically... All these look like picture a sit up a right angle pinball machine. Now you gamble. You go in and you drop a thing on top, and the ball goes and you try to win money.
Or maybe
so Pachinko, Plinko. You see, they took the concept, and that's what prices they hacked. What they're doing
maybe
in Tokyo?
They did, or maybe
I'm showing you right
maybe,
here, brother.
No,
right
no,
here.
But maybe. But who started first?
This has been in Japan. I was in Japan in 1991, and they were doing this. These pachinko houses were all over the place. You walk in, it's just like, bada, 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 these crazy noises,
gotcha.
And everyone just stares at you. You need table? You need table? You know, they go crazy on you.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, no, I'm good. I don't need table. I just want to watch.
But on the and, Price is Right, it's Plinko.
Mm. I know that, Moose. What I'm saying is they did not they didn't want to hack the name completely.
No, but you said we were wrong on the right
all
on
right,
the name on
I
the
made
Price
a
is Right.
By saying you were wrong.
So we're not
Thank
all
you,
right.
Tez.
But Andrew and I were right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And there's another game called Pachinko.
Okay. I know everyone if here is obsessed with being right. So I get it. I understand the narrative here.
Congratulations, Andrew.
What I'm
Thank
saying
you.
Is
you too, it feels good, right?
I'm trying
you
to play
bingo.
Okay. I'm trying to show you the birth of Plinko.
Oh,
you think?
I know. And I'm going to find out. And Mikey B's going to help me. How about that?
Oh, boy.
Mike, can you
congrats,
find
Mike. Mike. Everyone's a winner. We're all right.
Plinko was created by
Frank.
I'm sure
Lane Mean's on it right now.
He's on it right. What's that, Mike?
Plinko was created by Frank Wayne, an executive producer of The Price is Right. Plinko premiered on January 3rd, 1983.
Okay. Now, can someone find out the Japanese obsession called Pachinko? Because I promise you that's around since the 60s. I promise you. And I'm telling you guys, listen, we're having fun here. You know, we have a lot of fun. We all love each other. But can we understand or agree that...
I can see the similarities.
That's what I'm... Moose, can you see the similarities?
Yeah, no, I can see the similarities.
And maybe this executive producer... What
Frank
do you got,
Wayne. Well, yeah, Pachinko was created in the 1920s.
Boom.
I'll follow up with Frank and see where he got the idea from.
You actually probably could.
He actually can.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable. Mike, I told you he would help me.
Well done, Mike.
He would help you too, Moose.
He does help me every day.
He helps me all the time.
Yes.
I need him.
Frank Wayne is dead.
All right.
Yeah.
So and this conversation's dead.
Yes. Go ahead, Andrew. Yes.
Back in the NBA last night, the Suns smacked the Kings 124-95. Boston lost in Philly 107-93. Andre Drummond, 32 points, 23 boards, 4 blocks. The Pistons winning in Indy 119-110. And the Hornets outscored the Bulls 126-125. Charlotte rookie P.J. Washington scored 27 points on 7 threes, the most ever in an NBA debut. Taz, back to you.
I just have to say, I don't understand why we would not respect the elder statesman in the room and the world traveler. I just brought this information that's so cool for our audience and for you men about Pachinko.
Yeah.
And we just did something, the three of us, me, Moose, and Andrew. We just did something really cool. We brought worlds together. We brought in the world of Japan.
Things the NBA can't
well,
do.
I mean, sometimes when you say something, our fact checkers are running around like their heads are cut off to see if it's exactly correct.
Right.
Well, okay. I understand.
So
I think that was a passive-aggressive statement, but that's okay.
No,
well, because sometimes I'll say things that I think happened and they don't. That does happen. And our fact checkers are like, oh, God, wait, he just said something.
Now right. On my resume.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I'm not going to argue. I know that was a passive-aggressive insult,
was
but I'm not insulted.
I'm not being passive-aggressive. How
no, not
passive-aggressive.
But it's okay. It's, no, it's fine. I've been told a lot worse. But so the thing is, and I'm a big boy. I'm not hypersensitive. But the thing is, I'm letting you guys know that we just brought worlds together. You mentioned something about Plinko on
Plinko,
which sounds so much like Pachinko.
Yeah, and maybe we'll come find a relative of Frank Wayne.
Yeah, Philip and Mark are his kids.
Yeah, see if we can find them.
We'll reach out to them.
I'm sure they're locked into what happened in 83.
Well, no, but the thing is, though, like...
My dad did what?
Yeah. But that's like a
serious... What's Plinko?
Like, you know what's serious to me? Like, they stole the idea from
Japan. You mean
Japan.
Pachinko?
Yeah. I need to see... Okay. You guys play haha, and I'll do research. Hold on. I'll do my research. Hold on. I'm doing my
It'd
research.
It'd be great if the Wayne family can't discuss Plinko... Because, like, The Price is Right
I think
owns
they just
it.
Came up on a documentary on Netflix, Pachinko Plinko.
Which came first?
You can have fun, but that's fine. I'm doing research right now. I'm working on research for this topic. What's that called? Price is Right? Yeah. So, and Mike, I know Mike's
Name
helping.
That
this.
Price.
Price is Right. Okay.
That was a good one.
That was a funny joke from 1976.
78.
Yeah. Hold on a second. Pachinko, because you guys haven't left New York, so that's the problem. So
that's not here we go.
Come on, I've been in Jersey. Right.
Oh, here we go.
I've been to Jersey.
According to the Bro Bible here.
What's it say?
It came from the guy thought it said when the chips hit went down, it sounded like a plink sound effect. So he called it Plinko. When it hit the mouse.
I don't like that answer, Mike. I'm going to go to Google Images. I'm going to look at the Price is Right Plinko. All right, look, this board, you described it perfectly, Moose. This is it, right?
I don't know if it was perfect. Andrew.
No, one of you guys did. This is the board, right? Okay. That you're telling me.
I couldn't find the word pegs.
Can we get.
That's funny. Pegs. I was having trouble with my vocabulary. Andrew, help me out.
We can't. Assist.
There is slotted things. Pegs, they're called.
They're called pegs,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Andrew.
So as a cohesive unit, and Mikey B., I blame you for this, you're a producer. As a cohesive unit, we cannot look at the Plinko board and then look at a Pachinko board and see the massive similarities. I mean, I'm sure our social media team will tweet this out. I mean, can we not see this? Well, I mean, it's so obvious.
Yeah, I wouldn't say massive. I mean,
I know you
the
people here lack creativity, but I'm just saying.
Oh, right. Thank you. There we go.
Their most common
That's
thing
not
is passive
passive aggressive.
That was just aggressive.
What's that, Andrew?
I mean, their biggest commonality is gravity. But like Pachinko is like a video game almost. And there's a million
a
of them sitting there,
stop.
And you get a little tiny ball. Pachinko, Plinko, you have to win the discs first.
Yeah.
So you have more chances. Then you climb a staircase.
And you drop them down.
And you have to pick which slot you're going to start in, drop
sound
it
like
down.
You such a knob right now. You realize that, dude?
We'll get in more into the history of Plinko.
Why we can't we continue
1v1.
Why?
Well, because we have a guest coming up.
What time? Now?
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe he knows.
So, yes.
All right.
So, we'll get into it.
Time got away from me. Man.
I understand.
My bad.
No worries.
All right.
No worries.
My bad.
Adam Fisher's going to join us. As a former executive with the Mets and the Braves, we're going to talk a little fall classic as the Nats have a 2-0 series lead on the Stros. We're going to do that next. We'll also get into the Mets managerial search and this quote-unquote mystery candidate. It's Taz and the Moose here on this Thursday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance. Let's hit the guest line right now. Adam Fisher joins us, MLB analyst for SNY, a longtime executive in Major League Baseball with the Mets and the Braves. Fish, good morning, man. How are you?
Adam, what's up?
Hey, good. Good. Good morning, Moose. How you doing? How you doing, Taz?
Well, good, buddy. Good. All good, man.
You know, Adam, we're both stunned here that this is a 2-0 series lead for the Washington Nationals. I mean, they are 18-2 in their last 20 games for a team that couldn't find a way to win in the playoffs. Now they don't know how to lose.
Crazy. It's crazy. You know, I think they've certainly got some positive momentum, and the Astros, you know, look, there's something to be said for bad juju. You know, we've got that clubhouse situation that's been hanging over the club these last couple days, and really the Yankees kind of wore them out while the Nationals were sitting around and resting. And the Nationals do have two horses that can play with the Astros horses, and we've seen that. So, I don't think anyone expected this, but if you reflect upon it, you know, it certainly at the very least, make some level of sense how this is all going, despite the Nationals' history.
Well, Adam, speaking on that, though, for you personally, are you shocked at the level of what's happened now here, sitting 2-0? The Nats are shocked, yeah.
I'm extreme, yeah. And especially last night, a blowout,
yeah.
You know, with Verlander on the mound. I'm pretty shocked, especially just the, how easy it was. The Nationals, you know, Davey Martinez has been dogged for the last 2 years. We've watched him manage, you know, when we watch him against the Mets. And that the Corbin move on Monday night, you know, Tuesday night, seems to have worked out extremely well, you know. They were able to hold on in that game, and now they blow them out in game two. I mean, yeah, I'm shocked. I think the Astros are the best team, but, you know, like I said, you reflect upon it, and it's not really surprising considering the momentum and sort of what's transpired the last 10 days.
You know, Adam, when you look at Cole and Verlander, from your perspective, and, you know, you scouted players and the like, why have they not been as dominant? What has transpired here with both of them over the last couple of starts?
For me, it's just that grind, you know, that season-long grind. And it's a war of attrition, and we talked a lot about it with the Yankees and how they were going to survive with such a beat-up staff and a bullpen that was being stretched. And in the Astros' case, you know, look, there's only so many guys who are Madison Bumgarner, you know, and it looked like Verlander's been that guy in the past, you know. But he's 37 years old, and, you know, Cole has not really been through it. This is a really long stretch here we're talking about, and it's tough, and it affects your command. It affects your sharpness, and we saw that in Cole's last start against the Yankees. You know, certainly he grinded it out the other night, but it's really that's what it comes down to for me, that battle of attrition. When you get deep into the playoffs, these guys are really worn out. They're getting into the, you know, over 200 innings, 230s, 240s, and, you know, that can take a toll no matter how good you are.
Adam, what do you feel about, like, the energy of the Astros? Like, what kind of energy would they have to muster up when they're in D.C. now, starting Friday, to come up with a win now in Washington just to keep this thing competitive? Do you think they have?
I know, right? You kind of said it. It's like, these series, you never know. And, look, we make a bigger deal out of sort of the momentum, emotions, that kind of thing. But the human element is real. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I think people thought that the World Series was really, you know, Yankees versus Astros. Mm. You know, I think That's you could argue those were the two best teams in baseball, certainly over the course of the season. The Dodgers being another team in there that, of course, were eliminated by the Nationals. So I think the Astros have today to reflect and, you know, look themselves in the mirror and start to take these guys seriously. Their backs are against the wall. They've been there. They've done it. You know, maybe getting out of Houston is a good thing for them. Just kind of get on the road, get in an environment, more of a hostile environment, and kind of try to get their emotions up that way. But, yeah, they got to start taking these guys seriously and fast.
We're talking Adam Fischer, a former executive of Major League Baseball with the Mets and the Atlanta Braves, analyst on SNY locally in New York. And Adam, do you think this series, you know, do you think this series gets back to Houston for a game six?
I mean, if looking at it now, I mean, no, I don't. I, you know, the Nationals are thoroughly dominating them. They have the pitching advantage. If you want to call it that, I'm not even sure they do anymore with Grinke. He's pitched so much these last, you know, this last, probably 10-day stretch. Grinke against Aníbal Sanchez. That seems like a good game for the Astros to pivot. I think you could be looking at five here. The way this is going, the Nationals thoroughly dominating them. The Astros really do just they need to wake up and figure this out. And, you know, the other thing is they were not hitting as much as the Yankees bullpen and their issues and kind of how they gave it up with the 3-run homer in that series. Both those teams had 600 OPSs during that series. Neither one was hitting. Neither one were getting clutch hits when they needed them. The Astros, like I said, you know, we saw they really relied on that 3-run bomb, and that's also carried over into this series. So those bats need to wake up. They need to string together some hits. and get some rallies going, because now this is how many games in a row where this has happened for them.
Right. Adam, so, you know, Moose and I talk a lot about, and not just us, but a lot of people in the media world, TV and radio, you know, about what is Major League Baseball, what do they want in a World Series for you know, to pull money in and TV ratings, the all-important TV ratings and stuff like that, what's going on with Fox and whatnot. We talked about how early in the show, Moose and I were chatting about how the numbers are down for Fox from last year's Game 1 to this year's Game 1. What's your thought on it, man? Like, if it's not Yankees, Dodgers, and we got two markets where, you know, Houston's a top 10 market, but, you know, D.C. not so much. What's your take on that? That you have D.C. versus Houston, and if you're Major League Baseball, how do you feel about it?
You know, it's tough to have that sort of marquee franchise in there every single year. I think ultimately it's good for baseball to have different teams. I mean, yes, the Astros won it 2 years ago. Maybe that's an element to this, you know, the fact that they're not new. I know the Nationals are getting a ton of buzz on the East Coast, so I'm a little surprised that they're not getting a little bit better as far as ratings go. But I think if you think about the long game, you know, you're going to want more teams involved in this. You don't just want sort of the Dodgers or the Red Sox or the Yankees every single year. So, you know, you think about it kind of taking a step back as far as ratings for the good of the game, you know, on a broader scale, and trying not to panic as far as sort of 1 year or the next year, trying to look at it in a larger sample. But of course, I understand the general sentiment. This has been a sort of a strange year for baseball with the homers. You know, a lot of sort of purists don't necessarily like it, and that's really who their fan base is at this point, unfortunately, older people. So perhaps they're tuning out. Just based on the way the season went and the fact that there aren't these marquee franchises that we talked about. But I think ultimately you expose more people to some of these other teams. It's good for the game in the long term. Maybe you get some of those younger fans interested in these teams.
Adam, you know, we've got a lot of these managerial openings around Major League Baseball, right? Madden's out with the Angels. Reportedly, David Ross is going to be the next manager of the Chicago Cubs. The Mets' job is open. Philly's job is open. Girardi is interviewed for both. There's some mysterious candidate for the Mets. We know that they've also interviewed Eduardo Perez and Carlos Beltran. Where do you think eventually here, after this World Series gets decided, or maybe it comes out even before then, where do you think the Mets go and where do you think the Phillies go for a manager?
Well, we've seen for the Mets, it really seems just totally wide open. At least the media consensus, and I'm on board with this. You know, I like Girardi. They've got a limited window here with Jacob DeGrom's prime. You know, Brody Van Wagenen said, "I'm coming in to win." And, you know, Joe Girardi is a proven winner. He has his warts. You know, he's wound very tightly. But he did it in New York for a decade. You take the strengths and the weaknesses, and you try to win for 3 or 4 years with him. That's how I'd go about it. But look, you look at who they're interviewing here, and that's not their MO. They're not going, you know, 180 from Mickey Callaway. Yeah, you mentioned Perez, you mentioned Beltran. You know, we've also got Kim Bogar, who doesn't have any major league managerial experience outside of an interim stint, and Luis Rojas, who's a really, really well-regarded coach in the Mets system, also the son of Felipe Alou. That hasn't really been out there too much. Interesting nugget maybe for the fans. He's got great bloodlines, as we say, in baseball. But for me, it seems very wide open. Based on who they're interviewing, they're not necessarily leaning towards Girardi or anyone like that. So Eduardo Perez seems like an interesting candidate from the rest. You know, he has coaching experience. He has some winter league managing experience. He's well-spoken, member of the media. He'd be an interesting guy for me. I'd you know, probably prefer Girardi, but at the end of the day, after saying all this, it seems to me to just be very wide open. I mean, it's a massive group of second candidates. I'd say it seems like anywhere from three to four of those guys would have a shot.
And Fish, we've learned here on Taz and the Moose that the mystery candidate is indeed Taz. He's interviewing later on today.
Well, look, Taz, you
long-time
have a
Mets fan.
He wants the
job.
So there you go.
Right, you're right. I think I do have as much experience as other guys. I did manage my son's Little League travel team when he was 9.
Hey, Fish, enjoy the rest of the World Series. Thanks for the time this morning.
Right, bud. See you, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
You got Appreciate Adam Fisher, SNY, executive with the Mets, former executive with the Mets and the Atlanta Braves. You want Girardi still, right?
I do, man. Yeah, but it sounds like it's not happening. You think it's happening?
I don't get a sense that it is. I agree with you. But I think that would be a mistake. Come back. We got the three for you on this Thursday morning. Taz Moose, CBS Sports Radio.